So, you guys, open your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 6. This begins a crazy part of this chapter. And if you don't have a Bible, or if you're sitting next to someone, just look at them and you see, hey, they don't have a Bible. Open yours up to Ephesians 6. Pass it over to them so that they have one, okay, so that they don't feel left out. Now, I need to set this up because I have heard these final 20 verses taught in such a way that really messes people up, okay? It can really get a Christian off track. And so I want us, you know, to spend a little time and do this right so that you understand in full capacity what this really means, okay? So in order to do that, we need to finish up verse 9. Because what happened last time, we talked about our relationship towards, you know, our children as parents. We've already, before that, talked about the children's relationship towards their parents. And then how are we supposed to be as parents? We learned a ton about parenting. If you weren't here last week, you might want to get the CD. I talked to Dean after first service. We're going to do another parenting class. Important stuff. But we then moved to employees. We talked about slavery. So we talked about employees at work, all right? So each of us that have a workplace, you know, we could be equivalent to being a slave, if you will, all right? But we should be the ones having a blast in our workplace because we recognize that our workplace is our place of ministry, and it's a great opportunity that we get. But we didn't finish the thought because look what verse 9 says. And you masters, do the same things to them, to your employees, giving up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So how we are as employees, we look at our job as a place of ministry. It's an opportunity for us to minister to other people. Minister means servant, remember that. But what about those of you those of you that are business owners, or you're a manager, even for all of us that are parents, any of you that have people that work under you, that look up to you in a position of authority, what are we supposed to do? So we'll say those of you that are bosses in some capacity or another, okay? Even if you just have one person that answers to you, you're in that position. And so we also are to do the same thing. We are in a position that in which God can use you in ministry. So first of all, you need to understand if you own your own business, you don't own it anyway. It's God's business and you just work for him. Okay, first and foremost. But then secondly, that I want you to know that if you are in a position of authority, people are watching you. And they want to see if you're going to live out your Christian life. They want to see if you're going to really do what you say you believe. And so they're watching you, and they need to see Jesus in us. So Paul says, don't threaten and mistreat people. I mean, even I tell our own staff here that the beatings will continue till their morale improves. But, you know, but understand, we have a master also, and he's sitting in heaven. And he sees everything that we do. So God has placed you into positions to care for people. Can I tell you something? You guys look at me as the shepherd, and rightly so. But do you understand that if you are in a position of authority, you're a shepherd also. You're a shepherdess and a shepherd. If people answer to you, you are in the position of a shepherd or shepherdess. And so therein then, the people that answer to you are your little flock of sheep. Interesting, huh? They're not those bunch of jerks that work for you that can't get it right, okay? They are your little flock that God has said, I'm going to bring this little flock right to you because I want you to shepherd this little flock. I want you to tend them. I want you to lead them. And I want you to be an example to them. So you see, the very thing that you look at as, for me as a shepherd, you also are a shepherd, and God has given you a little group of sheep. And let me just tell you something. You don't beat sheep. And you don't drive sheep, you lead sheep. And so lead your sheep, okay? Okay? So with that said, you know, understanding that this is an awesome thing, don't misrepresent God to them. So I need to finish this letter. So it's going to require a little bit of your attention before we move into this end of it, because we got to set it up. Think about the flow of this particular letter. Okay? In chapters 1 through 3, Paul did something crazy. He took us to heaven. Remember? You've been saved. You're seated in the heavenlies. You're in the presence of Jesus Christ in the realm of the Spirit. The moment we got saved, God took us and he says, now, I want you to see heaven. I want you to see this thing that you've become a part of. Now, we get to see Jesus sitting on the throne. We get to see our position in Christ. Christ is in us. Very amazing opportunity that we get as Christian people. He's given us these awesome positions in the realm of the Spirit. And what is that for? So that we will then keep our focus and the focus of our life upon Jesus Christ. That we're going to live to serve him. He did that for us to give us a desire, to create a desire, to build and to maintain our personal relationship with him. And that's what chapters 1 and through 3 are. And so, knowing that, now he says, if you understand that position, it should change the way we live our lives in the world that we live in. And so then, in chapters 4 through 6, and we'll say A, through verse 9, where we just read, it was instruction on how to live out this heavenly perspective in an earthly manner. How are we going to live this out? How do we take this, what we know now, and walk it out? How do we live out our heavenly perspective? Well, Paul gave us several things. First of all, we need to learn as Christians how to get along. How we can have unity amongst ourselves. And so he gave us instructions on how to have unity in our marriages, in our families, and in our workplaces. In other words, how we live out our relationship with Jesus on a daily basis. And understand that it's most of the time selfishness is what destroys this. It's our own pride that destroys it. So listen very carefully, because this sets up the tail end of this. Okay, you with me? You understand where we've just come. If you, along with me, if we together today have said, you know what, Rob, I saw it, I get it, and you know what, I want to live out my Christian life. I've begun to take, you know, this serious. I'm in the game. I've begun to love my wife like Christ loves the church. I've begun this thing that we call submitting to my husband. We're wanting to take on the responsibility of raising and training our children. I've had problems with other Christians. I want to work that out. If we take that and we begin to move in that direction, listen very carefully, all hell wakes up. We've heard the phrase, all hell breaks loose, and it fits. For the Christian that says, you know what, I'm going to start living this thing out. I'm tired of being mediocre. I want to do the right thing. Because I can tell you something very, very important. Satan does not want you to focus your attention on Jesus. He does not want you to have a devotional life. In fact, he hates your guts. Did you know that? He hates you, okay? And he doesn't want you to have a relationship with Jesus. He doesn't want you to know that in order to have victory as a Christian, you get it through surrender. You get it through dying to yourself. Satan doesn't want you to know that. He doesn't want you to know that. He hates marriages that are glued together by Jesus. He also hates that if you are here today and you are walking with the Lord, but your spouse is not, and you're saying, you know what, I'm going to just continue to trust God. I'm going to continue to love my wife or my husband. He hates that. He hates it. He hates the ones that are committed to saying, you know what, we've had some difficulty, but we're going to work this out. Because you see, God hates divorce, Satan loves it. And he's the author of divorce. And he's the one that will fuel it, and he'll give you every excuse and justification to do that. He also hates you singles that are here today, and you're single, and you're saying, you know what? I have lived a life of compromise, but from this point forward, I'm going to abstain from sexual immorality. I'm going to trust that God has a spouse for me, and I'm not going to mess around until he brings that person to me. He hates it. So he's going to come after you. He hates it when we say we're going to raise our kids in the way of the Lord. He hates the Christian that says, I'm going to go to work tomorrow and minister. He wants you to look at your workplace as a place of bondage where you got to, I got to put the ball and chain on and go to work tomorrow. I hate my workplace. When you say, wow, I never saw my workplace as a place of ministry. Lord, I'm ready to be used. He hates that stuff. He hates it. He hates it when we want to be that workplace. Because here's the deal, and I just told you, he hates your guts. Are you encouraged? Are you guys all saying, thanks, Rob, I really appreciate that. That's what I came here for, man. Well, can I just tell you, right next to verse 10 that we haven't even read yet, I'm going to give you three different verses. Write it down next to it, okay? In John 10:10, because this is all setting up this thing called the, if you have a title, if you have a study Bible, mine says the whole armor of God, okay? John 10:10 says this, Jesus speaking about the enemy, the thief, that tells us a little bit about him, does not come except to do three things. Let me tell you what they are. To steal, to kill, and to destroy. If you've lived through a divorce, you know something. He ripped you off, he killed something in you, and he destroyed something about your family, didn't he? If you are here today and you're saying, you know what? I am committed to maintaining and to abstaining from sexual immorality. I'm going to do the right thing. And then you compromise. He stole something. He destroyed something. And he's going to kill something. It's what he does. But here's the deal. Jesus said, as he continues that same verse, oh, but wait, time out. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. So Satan wants to kill, to destroy, and to steal. But Jesus said, I come to give. I've come to bless you. I want to give to you. So Satan wants us to take our focus off of Jesus and put it on anything else. It was asked of me recently a simple question. Rob, what would you say is spiritual warfare? And it's a hefty subject. But if I could put it into one little nutshell, I would tell you that it is this. It is the attempt of Satan to distract me in any way that he can from my relationship with Jesus, using whatever means that he can. Even sometimes good things can distract us from our relationship with the Lord, can't it? And so I can tell you all of this in a nutshell. If you say, Rob, I want to live the Christian life in the way that it was meant to be lived, then I will tell you this, you better be ready to take a stand. You need to be ready. You need to come into this thing called the Christian life with your eyes wide open. I will tell you this, and I will promise you two things. It will be worth it. When you get to heaven someday, you're going to get to heaven, and you're not going to be saying, oh, man, I didn't get to buy that one last toy that I wanted. I could have had a bigger this. I could have, you know, I was so close to becoming a millionaire. Oh, I almost made, oh, I wish I could go back and become a millionaire. I promise you one thing. When you get to heaven, you're going to look back and say, oh, man, look at all the time I wasted here and there and there. But your commitment to Jesus, you'll never regret. And I will go on record to tell you this. If you're going to make that commitment to stand and to live the Christian life, you're going to enjoy life a whole lot more here. You'll be in a battle. Of course we are. But it's going to be worth it. I can promise you that. So here's the deal. As we are living in these last days, and I believe it with all my heart, we could be the very generation that would see the rapture of the church. Could happen at any minute. Honestly, it'd be cool if it happens before we finish this study. We'll finish it in heaven, man, okay? But here's the deal. Satan knows he's running out of time. So he's stepping it up. He's saying, well, man, you know, it's fourth quarter. I'm running out of time. He's losing like crazy. And that's why Peter said these words. Write this down next to verse 10. Here's your second verse. 2 Peter 3:3. Knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts. Have you seen scoffers? Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something? I've seen scoffers in an interesting location that really honestly, it kind of caught me off guard. I've seen it inside the church as a whole. Let me explain to you what I mean. There's a shaking that is happening. This economy is doing something interesting, isn't it? It's shaking things up. It's separating Christians even, or at least we'll say professing Christians. Those that are saying, you know what, I'm going to live for Jesus, I'm going to take my stand, I'm going to walk with him. Those that are saying, come on, man, don't be radical. You know, you're taking it a little extreme, aren't you? And you will begin to see this shaking take place of those that are saying, I'm just going to trust God, and those that are Christians that are saying, come on, man, let's not get too crazy here. We're seeing this sifting happening. Have you noticed it? Where even amongst your own Christian brothers and sisters, if you're living it out, they will begin to view you as a radical. Isn't that interesting? I say, bring it on. So we are in this battle, and I will tell you, any dead fish can float downstream, and it takes a strong living fish that's willing to endure the smell of dead fish to go upstream. Okay? So I encourage you to be swimmers. So we're in a battle. It's crazy. You know, I mean, we look around. One of the battles is that it's in our own flesh and blood that we battle with our own pride. And that's the one that when we get to heaven, you guys, I mean, it's kind of funny. We talk about, oh, man, the streets are going to be paved with gold. Awesome. Do you guys realize what that means, though? Can't wait to see the golden streets. It'd be so cool. Do you realize that? That's not cool. I know you guys are saying, oh, you just ruined my perspective of heaven. Streets, gates made out of jewels and all that kind of stuff. If I were to walk up to Main Street and just grab a hunk of asphalt out of one of the many, different potholes that are out there, and I were to say, check it out, asphalt, is this awesome or what? You would look at me and say, okay, you've lost your mind. But do you understand that in heaven, asphalt is just gold. We're going to walk around on asphalt, and it's gold. And that's all its value is to walk around on it. We're not going to go up and grab a piece of it and say, check it out. Everybody's going to look at you and go, it's just the street, Rob. What's the big deal? But it's gold. No, it's asphalt, okay? You're tripping. So, and I am tripping. So, you know, one of our battles is our own pride. That's where I was headed. Okay, I remember now. I'm back, okay? Think this through with me, you guys. Check it out. When we get to heaven, the big deal is going to be we won't have this battle with our own pride anymore, with our own flesh and blood. Satan's not going to be able to lure us any longer. That will be over. That pressure will be gone. Won't that be awesome? That's where I was headed. But now you know gold is asphalt too, okay? So you got something out of the deal. So I see this amazing opportunity of Satan to distract us in many ways. One of them is to distract us into self-centeredness. Me, what about me? What about my needs? It's a distraction, you guys. What about the battle with Islam, the battle of homosexuality? Are those real battles? Yes, they are. Can they become a distraction? Yes, they can. C.S. Lewis, in his letters, what's called the Screwtape Letters, if you've never read it, it's a crazy book. It's a hard read, I will tell you that. Well, at least for me. I graduated from Hoover. That tells you a little bit why it was a hard read for me, okay? But here's the deal. In chapter 7, he does this crazy thing where because it's talking Screwtape as a demon, so he's writing this from the demonic perspective of how to mess with humans. And he's talking to, you know, one of his junior demons, trying to teach him how to mess with humans. And in chapter 7, he talks about distract them, whatever you can do to distract them. And he says, allow them to get focused on patriotism or pacifism. So can patriotism become a distraction to us? Got it, country. And I am a patriot, you guys. But it's got to be God first. You see what I'm saying? I am a patriot. In fact, I was on Thursday morning, I was out at Miramar welcoming home 192 Marines that just got home from Afghanistan. and I'm a patriot. But we can't be distracted into patriotism in replacement of Jesus. Passivism, none of it matters. It's a distraction also. It's an amazing chapter in the book. So basically, Satan says, sit down, Christian, shut up, do what we tell you to do, while he continues to destroy us and our society. And that's the whole point. In this distracted mode, Satan says, yes, just stay distracted. Just focus on yourself. Focus on anything else other than Jesus. And if he can get us there, where he's got us in a place where he wants us to be. So here's another verse for you, the third one, okay? Because if we know that God is in control, we are. 1 Peter 5:8 says this, be sober. In other words, be alert, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. So here we have a verse that talks about Satan, who is like a roaring lion. Can he get to us? He can harass us. But yet, you know, here we are as Christians living in the last days, and whenever a Christian is portrayed in Hollywood, what do they portray us as? Dweebs, weird, right-wing, bigots, weak-minded, imbeciles, right? Is that what we are? No. And so it's interesting, though, that in these last days, we are taking a stand for what is right. We are taking a stand for morals and values in our schools and in our school system. We want to say the Bible is our standard. And so it's interesting don't you find it fascinating that in all reality, the Word of God is where much of this battle is taking place. Did you guys know that in the 1800s, when they taught kids how to read, you know what this was, the textbook? Isn't that crazy? And so here's your final one, okay? Did I say three? I'm giving you four. In John 17:14, he says, Jesus praying his final prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane, I have given them your word. The world has hated them because they're not of the world, just as I am not of the world. So let me ask you a question. Did they hate Jesus? Yeah. And they're going to hate us. Guess what? We're in good company. Now, I will tell you, don't let them hate you because you've done something stupid, okay? You cut somebody off on the freeway and they give you the finger and say, wow, the persecution's just heavy on me today. No, you know, you did something dumb, okay? We need to apologize for that, okay? So now then, I say all of this because I wanted to set something up. Unity is worth fighting for. Living the Christian life is worth fighting for. But I'm using the word fight, so you get the picture. We're in a fight, we're in a battle, and if we're going to be in a fight, we need to know, we need to have the proper gear. When we were with these young kids up at Camp Pendleton, these recruits, they are there at Pendleton during that time to learn how to use their weapon. They teach them all about the gun. You got to be able to take it apart, put it back together. That's their primary weapon. They need to know tactics of warfare. Because why? You're going to go into Afghanistan. You're going to go into, you know, some location where you need to know how to use the weapons of warfare. And that's what Paul is doing here. He said, guys, all this whole book culminates right here to say, all right, we're in a battle. But now, just to make sure you understand what you're doing, let me define it for you. So that's where we pick it up. So are you ready to roll here? Verse 10. And have your pen ready or your highlighter, because I'm going to give you a couple of things that are very, very important for us to understand this final section. Finally, and I know what you're thinking. Yes, finally, okay. My brethren, be strong. But be strong what? In the Lord. You see that? Highlight those or circle it or do both or whatever. You need to remember those words. Okay? Be strong in the Lord and in the power of what? His might. Do you see that? So not be strong and in the power of our might, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. So circle those two phrases. Now watch this, verse 11. Now then, put on the whole armor, but look what the armor is, of what? Interesting. So we see in the Lord, power of His might, of God. It should be giving us a clue about where we're headed. That you may be able to, what? Stand against the wiles of the devil. To stand. Very important. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against a spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. You guys realize he wrote this 2,000 years ago? Look what's happening now. Therefore, take up the whole armor of who? God. That you may be able to withstand, which maybe just basically is to stand, in the evil day, and having done all to what? To stand. So we have in the Lord, power of His might, of God, verse 11, to stand. We have of God in verse 13, withstand, to stand, verse 14, we'll get into it next week, I think, standing. That gave you another hint. So are you seeing what's happening here? It's important for us to know what we're doing, because the worst thing in the world that I could do is to send you guys out of here going, hoorah, yeah, let's go get it. We're ready to fight, Rob, let's go get them. I would send you out as lambs to the slaughter, and it would be to your own destruction. We are to be strong. He tells us that. But whose strength is it? It's God's strength. It is the strength of the Lord. Where does the strength come from? He says, he never tells us anywhere in this passage, be strong in the power of your might. He doesn't tell us to be strong in our own strength. Honestly, I'll confess something to you. In the realm of the spirit world, I am a stinking wimp. We're weaklings. We are not told to be strong in our wisdom or our knowledge or have a strong personality or a strong upper lip or a strong ability. We are to be strong in the Lord. Listen to what the Greek means. And they have, in the Greek, they have tenses, like past tense. They use one word, past tense, present tense, future tense, and also a tense that means to be increasing in. And this is one of those. The word strong means increasing in strength. So the word strong right there in verse 10, circle it and put increasing in strength. We are to be increasing in strength. But again, it's not increasing in our, we are to be increasing in strength in where? In the Lord. You see what I'm saying? You see what's happening here? Then he exhorts us, and in the power of his might, it literally means this, in the strength of his might and power. His might and his power. So the Amplified Bible, if you don't have one, you need to get one. It's a great way to look at it, because what it does is it will take Greek and Hebrew and just insert it into the text so that you're reading it and it doesn't say, the Greek word says. It just applies it right there. So here's what it says in the Amplified Bible. Be strong in the Lord. Listen carefully. I love it. Be strong in the Lord. Be empowered through your union with Him. Draw your strength from Him, that strength which His boundless might provides. You see how that sounds? Do you see any of us hardly in there at all? Be strong in the Lord, be empowered through your union with Him, draw your strength from Him, that strength which His boundless might provides. So we're to find our strength in our relationship with Jesus. This is what's so important. We have no strength. Well, Rob, I take offense to that. You don't understand, man. I've been studying the Bible for years. Honestly, somebody that's truly been studying the Bible for years begins to realize how weak you really are. I've heard Pastor Chuck Smith, who's been teaching the Bible for over 50 years, planted churches all over the world, Bible colleges, and he just said at our last pastor's conference, the more I study the Word of God, the more he shows me that I don't know anything. Have you discovered that? It's an interesting thing. You know, when we first start, we say, I got to know everything, man. I want to learn. I want to know what's going on. And then after a couple of years, we're going, I don't know anything. The more I study, the less I know. I mean, we gain understanding, but it shows us that we really don't know anything. So We are instructed to find our strength in the Lord. We have no strength. Well, Rob, I'm sorry, I disagree with you on that. Can I give you another verse that you can put down next to verse, you can put it next to verse 11. How about that? John 15:5. You guys know this one. I am the vine, you are the branches. Jim and Debbie love that verse. Jim, our saxophone player up here, his last name is Branch. He loves this one. Look what he says, though. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me you can do how much? Nothing. So don't be offended by me. Jesus says, apart from me, you got zip. You can do zippo. But Rob, I've done mighty things in the name of God. Well, but apart from him, you can do nothing. Okay? So he is the source of our power. So can I tell you a secret? Power is a person. Strength is a person. It's not a possession. Strength, might, is a person. When we're in our context, for us as Christians, we need to understand strength, power, might are all a person. I'll tell you the secret. It's Jesus. He is strength. He is power. He is might. Are you with me? And if he is in us, and as we develop our relationship with him, we increase in strength, but it's not our strength. It's him in us. It's him working in and through us. So the strength comes as we build the relationship with the Lord. So it's not us out there doing anything. So it is us learning the secret to his strength is dying to ourself. It is dying to our flesh. It's dying to that idea that I can do this. I'll pull myself up by my own bootstraps. Rob, I can do it. Just give me the list. Show me what to do and I can live this thing out. No, it's us understanding I can't pull myself up by my bootstraps. I can't live this thing called the Christian life. So can I tell you that it maybe we should say it this way? We increase in our understanding of our weakness. And as I increase in my understanding that I can do nothing apart from him, as I understand how weak I am, I begin to gain in his strength. Does that make sense? This is a principle. I increase in my understanding of my weakness. At the same time, I understand I'm increasing in his power and in his might. We live the Christian life. Some of us just kind of live it by, we live life just la-di-da-di-da, okay? Not really thinking about anything until the enemy comes. And then all of a sudden we go, ah, what's happening to me, Rob? Where is this coming from? I'm under attack. And sometimes we take off running, but at some point we got to take a stand. But it's us standing, but it's not us getting the victory. It's Jesus giving us the victory. Does that make sense? You know what? To help illustrate it, I'm going to show you just a video clip to help you get what I just shared with you, to seal it into your brain. So watch the screen, okay, if you can bear it. Thank you. Do you get the picture? I know he got a bloody nose, but you ever feel like that? That is what I want you to get in your mind. Yeah, we take a stand. Have you ever felt like you were out on a limb? Or up a creek? I know it was an unbearable video clip, but I'm glad that you guys... Listen, I want you to watch what's happened, okay? I want to show you something that's transpired here. Yeah, we take the stand, but the battle's not ours. The battle is Jesus. Satan's not afraid of us. He's afraid of Jesus. Just as you read the New Testament and the sons of Sceva, when they said, Paul we know and Jesus we know, but who are you dudes? And the demon came and attacked them. They went running away in their underwear. You know, it's an amazing story. But Paul has brought us on this journey, and I want you to see something, okay? We started out this book in heaven, seated in the heavenlies. We then moved to earth with our earthly calling. Now he says, now take a stand. Can I show you something? Jesus started in heaven, didn't he? He started in heaven, and then he came to earth and he walked amongst us. Just as Paul laid it out for us, Jesus did this. He became that example. And then he took a stand. Where did he take his stand against the devil? The ultimate one was at the cross. As they stood that cross up, and he stood there and he defeated Satan right in his own ballpark, right in his own living room. Jesus won by dying. And here's the deal. We will only discover our true strength of the Lord, or when, you know, in the Lord, when we come to the cross. We find our strength when we are dying. When we agree that we will die to ourselves, to the notion that we have any ability or any power to fight this thing called the Christian fight. That is where we will have the same victory that Jesus had. The more we reckon our old life to be dead, the more we will discover the strength of Jesus Christ. The more we run to him, the less bloody noses you're going to have. It's only when we're wandering off, that's when we get all beat up, you see. So in 2 Corinthians 12:9, you can write this one down next to verse 13. Paul said, you know, after he'd been dealing with this crazy something going on physically in his life, he says, God, please take this away. And God said to him, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength... Listen, whose strength? His strength is made manifest or made perfect in weakness. See, we like strength. We want to minister from a position of strength. We laughed earlier at Camp Pendleton the last time that we were there. They brought the Marines over an hour early. The band wasn't done. They weren't done doing sound check. Too bad. Let's go. So we were laughing about that, saying, but Lord, we haven't done our sound check yet. See, we want strength. We want to operate from a position of strength, and we've got it all together. And the Lord basically told us, guys, don't worry about it. It really doesn't matter what you do anyway. I'm at work here. And it was an amazing move of God where a couple hundred guys got saved in spite of all of this stuff. So God is the one that is at work. And the key is to understanding that it's not about us being strong. It's about us recognizing I am weak, Lord, but you're strong, and it's in that weakness that I have where your strength is made known. This is the key. I told you earlier in John 15:5, it's apart from me, you can do how much? Nothing. But interestingly enough, Paul recognizes this crazy dichotomy of the Christian life. And that's what I'm explaining to you guys today before we get into the armor of God, because I don't want you to walk out of here thinking, I'm ready to fight. In Philippians 4:13, you guys know that one, very memorized passage. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can do how many things? Well, wait a minute. Jesus said, apart from me, you can do nothing. Yeah, in and of myself, I got nothing. Zip. But then Paul says, but I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He becomes my strength. See, Paul understood this crazy thing in the Christian life, that you win by surrender. You get victory when you die. Do you see how this sounds? Totally unlike anything that the world teaches us. So the key to understanding the rest of our text, the key to understanding how the armor works and how to understand the power of Jesus working in us is when we recognize that we are weak. Is that we recognize, I can't do anything. Now, does that mean that we sit and do nothing? No. This is the amazing battle. There is a battle to be fought. We are in a war. The victory is sure. Now, we need to enter it. But Rob, I thought you said that we don't have to fight the battle. Listen, it is the power of God and the sovereignty and the control of God. He's in control. Does he need us? No. Does he choose to use us? Yes. So he says, I'm going to use you. So it's not me, God, in exclusion of us. It is God working, and he chooses to use us. So it is God doing the work, but us being in the process. In the book of Joshua, you can read it in chapter 1. I'll just paraphrase it for you real quick. He looks out there in the promised land, and he looks and he says, Joshua, you see this whole territory of what was then called Canaan, now modern-day Israel. And he says, it's all yours. I have, past tense, given it to you. Joshua's standing in this land looking at Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, termites, and out of sight. All of these things are in this land. And he says, Joshua, I have given it to you. It's yours. The battle is sure. The victory is won. So what did he tell Joshua to do? So just kick back, dude. You know, head out to the desert for a little while, and when you come back, it'll all be done. Did he tell him to do that? No, he says, now, strap on your sword, prepare the army, get ready for the battle. So God said, I've given it to you. It's already won, but you put on your sword and grab your weapon because you're going to engage in a battle, but I'm going to give you the victory, but you're going to be a part of the process. So it's not us doing nothing. It's us being a part of the process. It's us trusting God to say, God, I'm going to enter into this thing called the battle of the Christian walk, but you're the one that's got to give the victory. It is an amazing blend of the sovereignty and the power and the control of God and human responsibility. And Joshua gives us a great picture of that. So when we understand that, we need to understand where the battle exists for us as Christians. Paul lays it out and he says, and he describes all these different spiritual entities that he describes, that the weapons what does he say? We wrestle against, not against flesh and blood. Do you see that in verse 12? Not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. So he's just described two different locations, two different battlefields. And it's important that we understand this. We are in a spiritual battle, but we live in the flesh and blood world. What do I mean by that? Here we are today. We're interacting with each other in this, we'll say, in this field right here that I am in. And this is the flesh and blood field where we interact with each other. This is where marriages are at. This is where children are at. This is where you work. This is where we play. This is what happens in this flesh and blood world that we live in. This is where we interact. But on the other hand, there's this unseen spiritual world that we coexist with somehow. And I don't have all the answers for you guys, okay? But it coexists. We can't see it, but I do believe that God allows us to be involved in it at times. There are times when you can sense it. I believe that sometimes we can even feel it at times. Have you ever walked into a room, into a location, and go, ooh, something doesn't feel right about this place? That ever happened to you? You've just come in contact with the spiritual realm. God has allowed you to sense something in the unseen world of the spirit. You go, have you ever met someone? And you meet them for the first time and you go, something's not right there. Has that ever happened to you? God is allowing you. Beware of those things. Don't just, you know, we as husbands are, you girls honestly are more sensitive to the things of the unseen world because you feel stuff. And so we as men are guilty of saying, oh, honey, knock it off. He's a nice guy. What's wrong with you, man? You're feeling stuff. I mean, we're guilty of that. Husbands, listen to your wives when that kind of stuff happens. So it's an interesting thing that takes place in this spiritual world. You're saying, well, now, Rob, you're throwing out your opinion pretty heavily here. No, let me give you another one, okay? Write this down next to verse 13. And I'm just going to paraphrase it. It's in 2 Kings 6:16. Here's the storyline. Elisha is in this city, and he's got his servant or his assistant. And the assistant wakes up in the middle of the night because he can hear the clattering of soldiers outside. And he gets up and he looks outside and he sees this chariots all around. He sees these warriors all around. He can hear the chinking of armor and the clatter of wheels. And he looks around and he wakes up Elisha and he says, Elisha, we're in trouble, man. We're surrounded by the enemy. Joshua says, you kids. You just don't see stuff, do you? Listen to what it says. He says to him, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with him. The servant probably looked at him and said, excuse me? We got two. And I see a whole army surrounding us right here. And they want you, Elisha. So Elisha says, chill out. That's the Rob version. And he prayed and he says, Lord, I pray, open this young man's eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Coexisting, he says, God, remove the flesh and blood from his eyes so he can see in the realm of the spirit. And as he did, the kid goes looking around, and he goes, whoa, chariots, horses of fire all around us. Elisha said, so what was your problem again, young guy? Don't you worry. The battle isn't ours anyway. The battle belongs to the Lord. Elisha understood that. He got to see this realm of the spirit, where the, if you will, the real world exists, the world in which God exists. This is real, where the real battle for souls of men takes place. But here's what happens, you guys. Sometimes we can, and as now also, before we jump there, can I just tell you, sometimes not only do we feel the presence of evil, have you also been able to feel the presence of God? Where you just, I mean, you get up in the morning some days and you're reading your devos and all of a sudden just the overwhelming presence of God where he's just wrapping his arm around, he's just loving you. And you walk into a location and you can just sense the presence. You meet someone for the first time and you could say, that dude's got to be a Christian. I know he is. Or that girl, got to be a Christian. Because you can just sense the presence of God. So I don't want you to think that it's only an evil thing. But in this world, you guys, you can sense it, and we have this flesh and blood location where Satan rules and reigns. And this is where he wants us. He says, come on, guys, get in the flesh and blood. How does that happen? Well, give you some examples. Have you ever, think about this, husbands and wives that are here today, the last time you got into a disagreement, think about it. Was it stupid? Some petty, stupid little thing where your husband comes home and he says, so what did you do all day? Right? And so you as a woman, so see, Satan's going, yes, come on, get in the flesh and blood. And so you as a woman say, well, I'll show you what I did all day long. Come here, let me show you. You're going to talk to me? I can't believe you would even say that. And so a flesh and blood battle ensues because you got your feelings hurt. You attack his pride. Well, what did you do all day? Sit behind a desk. You didn't have to raise a kid. You didn't have to do. And on the flesh and blood goes. Think about that. Man, what about that, you know, the time that you come home and you're saying, hey, you're hoping that your wife's going to just be there to greet you. And you come in and you're going, where is she? And so you finally find her and say, can I even just get a little hello, get a little appreciation since I come home? Oh, okay, hello. And so now the flesh and blood. And we get into these little fights. And then all of a sudden it starts turning up the heat. And we say, well, you didn't say hello to me the last time. Well, I don't need to say hello. And we're in the flesh and blood. And Satan's going, blowing on the fire, saying, yes, fight, ignite. And then he'll bring your kids and throw it in. Well, I did see Dad say hello to you the last time. Shut up. I didn't ask you anything anyway. And so now the kids are involved in this little battle. And Satan's going, yeah. And then the baby, you know, throws up all over himself. And he throws another log in. And you see this happen. Every time we get our feelings hurt, we allow our emotions to control us, we react or respond from hurt feelings, Satan has lured us into the flesh and blood battlefield where we battle it out, and right here we are of no value to the realm of the Spirit. You see what happens? Think about it, the last time it happened. What happened when you come into your workplace? Your boss says, hey, you, get me a cup of coffee, would you? And you say, jerk, can you remember my name? Immediately Satan's going, yes, yes, come. Come into the Spirit. In the flesh and blood, yeah, say something mean back. No, no, better than that. Go talk about him behind his back to someone else. Can you believe that jerk tells me to go get his cup of coffee? I spit in it for him. There you go. There's his cup of coffee. And you see what happens. This is how it works, isn't it? Satan's going, yes, get in this flesh and blood. Battle it out. Argue, fight. Get your feelings hurt. Let someone, don't talk to me that way. Do you know who I am? Or what about my needs? How come everybody gets attention but me? Don't treat me. And you see, all of this is centered in the next time it happens. Imagine this little field that you're in and Satan's going, yes. And he throws logs on the fire. One of my favorite proverbs is, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. So how do you get out of here and over into here where Jesus is at, where God rules and reigns? You get there by dying. You come to the cross, and when your wife says, well, I'll show you what I've done all day. Oh, time out. I apologize for the way I just responded. Listen, I love you. I didn't care if you do anything all day long today. You're beautiful. Now you're saying, come with me over to the realm of the Spirit. In fact, I'm buying you dinner tonight. You like that one, girls? I saw a bunch of men go, oh, where did that come from? You guys thought I was on your side. So now you die to yourself. You die to the pride that says, I got to defend myself. I got to respond. I got to justify my behavior. I got to tell that person. Or you wives, what happens if your husband comes home and says that? What have you done all day? You know what? I just been taking care of you, baby. And by the way, I'm going to take care of you for the rest of the night. You drag your husband over into the realm of the Spirit, see? And so you see, to get out of the flesh and blood, we have to die to our pride, we have to die to our hurt feelings, to the desire to justify and to defend. The only way that Jesus won was through death. The only way we will win and to get into the realm of the Spirit where God is at is to die. The closer we stay to Jesus, the less we are likely to be in the realm of the flesh and blood. But I tell you, Satan will try to drag you, to lure us, because I am guilty of it also, into the realm of the flesh and blood. He wants us to get into an argument over stupid things. And he wants us to, you know, to draw us in there, because that's where he's got the demon horde that he has, that he's going to use anything that he can to draw us away from just simply trusting in the Lord. But we're defenseless in that battle. When we want to, remember, apart from me, you can do nothing. I'll win this argument. I'll win this battle. I'll prove to her that I'm right. I'll show him. I'll show my boss. What can we do in this area? Nothing. It's a losing situation. You only dig a deeper hole. So now Paul tells us, put on the armor of God. Why? So we can go out and pick a fight with the devil? You say, put on the whole armor of God so you can go out there and fight and bind him and cast him out, as some denominations will teach. You got to do battle with the enemy. Listen, even the archangel Michael said, the Lord rebuke you. So he is no match for us any more than a lion or a bear cub is for a mountain lion. So he says, put it on, now stand. Just stand. Don't try to go out and fight him, but that means don't retreat, don't run and hide when the devil roars, don't whine and complain. We're in a battle. We're on the winning side. Don't flinch, don't scream. Stand knowing that Jesus is going to give you the victory. Let me tell you a quick illustration, and then we're done, okay? I'm closing my book so you can see, all right? In the book of 1 Samuel chapter 18, you can see it for yourself later. I'm going to give you the paraphrased version of it. King David has been anointed as the next king of Israel. You remember what happens? He goes out to meet his brothers. He meets this giant called Goliath. He goes walking up and he says, who is this dude, uncircumcised Philistine, popping off to the armies of God? Oh, David, you just stay here. David walks up, knocks him down, right? Cuts off his head. The battle is won. Saul, and this is, you read this little section right here, you guys, and you will see classic, beautifully illustrated picture of spirit and flesh battlefield. David walks out in the power of the, I come against you in the name of the God of the armies of Israel, walking in the spirit, takes him out, okay? Saul looks at that and says, who is this kid? I don't know, but I like him. Give him a job in the palace. David gets hired. He starts growing up. Pretty soon, you know, he's showing himself a mighty man of valor, a mighty man of integrity. They go out and he takes him into the battlefield. He comes back. David must have been amazing. They come walking back and they have this victory march through the city, ticker tape parade thing happening. And the girls come out. And you see, David has been anointed the king, but Saul's sitting on the throne. David hasn't assumed his position as the rightful heir and the rightful king upon the throne yet, because God's saying, I got to train this kid. God knew he's got great character. God knew that he would be a man after God's own heart. God knew that he would be a man of integrity, but that had to be trained into him through the school of ministry. They come walking back in, and the girls come out. Yeah, they got their little, you know, cheerleader outfits. They got the pom-poms. Yes, Saul has killed his thousands. Saul says, yeah, that's me. David, his 10,000s. Oh, Saul got sucked right into the flesh and blood. David ignores the praise of men, one of the greatest tools of the enemy to take down men is the praise of other men. It's a scary place. David blows it off, but something happens to Saul right there on the spot. It says that he began to eye David critically, with a critical heart from that day forth. See, Saul's feelings got hurt, and he goes, what? They only give me thousands. They give David 10,000s. What does he want now, the whole kingdom? And he turns into this little flesh and blood little baby, and he tries to get David into the flesh and blood battle. David refuses to go there. Here's what happens. Saul gets these migraines, some sort of spiritual attack. We don't know what it is. He plays his harp. They bring him in and say, hey, play that for Saul. See what happens. David plays this, Saul's migraines or whatever this thing is, goes away. So on another day, hey, Saul's got another one of those things. Come in here, David. David comes in. He starts to play. As he enters the room, Saul says, yeah, I'll show you. Takes his spear from his side, throws it at David. David, whoa, sticks in the wall. Trying to lure David into the flesh and blood. What does David do? Sit down, Saul, let me play for you. Leaves the spear in the wall and continues to minister. If it would have been me, I would have pulled the spear out, thrown it right back. Not once, not twice, three different times he throws a spear at David. David never pulls it out of the wall, never throws it back. You see, has anyone ever thrown a spear at you? Well, no, that depends, Rob. What do you mean by that? Has anyone hurled an accusation against you? Thrown an insult in your direction? Has anyone ever thrown gossip at your back? Have you ever dodged one of those kind of spears? What is Satan trying to do? Come on, pull the spear out, throw it back. Hurl it back. Say something mean in response. Pull it out, Rob. Defend yourself. What does David do? He says, no, 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 I'm going to stay in the realm of the Spirit. I'll leave the spear in the wall. Not only did he do that to David, after Saul made this promise, whoever kills Goliath, he can have one of my daughters. David says, hey, I'm too young to get married now, but later on, Saul says, David, I made a promise to you that I was going to give one of my daughters. Here, I'm going to give you this one. On the day of his wedding, Saul says, I know what I'll do. I'll get him into this flesh and blood battle. He takes the daughter on David's wedding day and gives her to another man on the wedding day. What do you think about that, David? David says, hey, I wasn't worthy to be a part of the king's household anyway. David stays in the realm of the Spirit. David's the leader of the army of Israel. Saul says, I'll make him quit. That's what I'll do. I'll really make him mad. David, you're being demoted. You're no longer the leader of the army. You got 100 guys. What does David do? Okay, well, Lord, you've given me these 100 guys. I'm going to make them the best 100 that you've ever had. And they become like, you know, green berets. Do you see how this works, you guys? This is how we as Christian people live the Christian life. We say, God, I'm going to trust you. I'm not going to defend myself. I'm not going to justify my behavior. If I'm wrong, I'll admit it. If I get sucked into the flesh and blood, the only way to get out is to die. Someone in an argument, somebody's got to die. You know that. And men, married men, it's got to be you. You guys lead. Okay? You be the leaders. Oh, but Rob, I'm leading by telling my wife to die. No, no. Jesus, thank you so much for your amazing word. And God, I pray that we would leave here today not going out thinking that we can win anything. We leave here today recognizing that in and of ourselves we can do nothing. We leave here today, Lord, seeing the flesh and blood battle. We see the spiritual battle. And God, we want to be soul winners. We want to participate in the soul winning process. And that only happens when we're walking in the Spirit. So today, God, fill us with your Spirit. Help us to see, Lord. Maybe this morning we already got into a flesh and blood battle. Maybe an apology needs to be given. Let us be Christian enough to do that. So God, we give you our hearts today in Jesus' name. Amen.